Hey everybody, welcome back to Grain Markets and Other Stuff. Thank you for joining me. We have a special guest today. My friend Ken Morrison is here to talk with us about China. Ken, thank you for joining us once again.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always great to have a discussion with you, Joe.
Ken is kind of like our resident China expert here. Hey, Ken, real quick, you used to work in China, and I don't know if I've ever asked you about that on the podcast, but what did you do when you were there?
I was representing Cargill in Cargill and Monsanto's joint venture, and we were attempting to commercialize high oil corn in China, and meaning that we were producing it in China, and we even had a license to sell it commercially in China, which is something that no other foreign commercial had.
You were there for several years, weren't you?
I was there for 4 years, yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so Ken has a lot of China experience, very knowledgeable about China, much more so than myself, and that's why he's here. I want to start off by asking you about the trade deal. The U.S. trade rep, Catherine Tai, she took office back in March. She came out, gave this speech on Monday. I didn't think she really gave us a whole lot of new information. She told us that the future of this trade deal depends on how conversations with China go. What was your takeaway from that speech, and what is your general feeling about the trade deal?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, there were actually three different episodes where I had an opportunity to listen to what the administration, including USTR Tai's position toward China is. First, and I only learned this yesterday, but first there was apparently a White House press conference on Sunday afternoon, and I happened to catch the transcript of that yesterday, and so I reviewed that. Then, of course, Monday was USTR Tai's presentation to one of the think tanks, trade think tanks in Washington, D.C. I listened to that in its entirety, 2 hours. And then I also listened to an 18-minute interview with CNBC, with USTR Tai. I found a few things. First of all, I think in all cases, they were very consistent in what their positions are. But I think we need to step back just a little bit. I read the reviews of her presentation on Monday, and I think it's fair to describe them as lukewarm at best. And I think similar to what your conclusion was, she didn't say a lot about that was anything new. But I think we need to step back a little bit here and consider, first of all, in terms of the objectives of the administration. There's a lot of chefs in the kitchen, if you will, when it comes to anything related to China. And so you've got trade relations, you've got commerce relations, you've got national security concerns, and a whole host of other economic concerns that everybody wants to have an opinion about China, and everybody may have conflicting objectives. And the first thing that I've noticed in the presentations given over the last 3 or 4 days is that there are conflicting goals within the administration. First of all, President Biden has said that we will enforce China's commitments and promises made in phase one. But then I say, well, look, let's think for a second, because if we go back just specifically on the agricultural side, back to day one of the phase one agreement, there is nobody that I'm aware of that believes that the dollar figure trade targets were anything close to reality. In fact, if you look at that today, you would have to say that even if the U.S. did not have the supply, nor did we have the capacity to meet those dollar trade targets. And so I think she's been dealt a little bit of a difficult hand, because one priority is on the one hand, you've got Biden saying we will enforce China's commitments. But on the other hand, everybody seems to agree that we don't want to do anything on trade to basically create problems, hostilities with China over trade. So I think there are obviously some very conflicting and going to be very challenging objectives that I don't see a way to meet them. The other takeaway is she strikes me, first of all, I'm very glad that that we have a Chinese Mandarin-speaking USTR to deal with China. So I think that certainly is a plus. If you're going to have a chance of winning, you need to put the best team on the field that understands the game. You pitch Wainwright against Scherzer tonight in a big playoff game, and so you send a Chinese speaking USTR ambassador to China to work with China. I think that's a plus. So I'm optimistic from that standpoint. But I think she rightfully said that she set low expectations for the outcome with China, and she did a very masterful job of dodging questions about how we would go about enforcing the trade commitments. So I guess my takeaway is, as far as putting China's feet to the fire on past commitments, I think we should get it out of our head. Ideally, and I almost sense that USTR Tai has taken this position quietly, but ideally, I think they should simply abandon the dollar trade targets set in phase one.
Well, you were about the first person probably to tell me, at least, that this trade deal is tremendously flawed because it was benchmarked in dollars, which makes it essentially impossible to track. I mean, we've seen some private groups and consultancy groups try to track it, but it would have been a lot easier to track this if it had been done in bushels or metric tons or whatever.
That's right. And the other thing that you're right, Joe, I from day one said that this deal was flawed and it had many flaws. But one of the major flaws that I saw is that you were trying to impose managed trade on two sides that in the case of the U.S., we've never believed in managed trade. And more importantly, the largest component of any trade deal is going to be soybeans to China. And in that respect, Chinese crushers is the private industry. You can't force the private industry to do things that are uneconomic. And if you did, you would be in violation of WTO commitments by the U.S. because we believe that trade should flow economically where trade where price dictates. So yeah, it had a lot of flaws. It still has a lot of flaws. And the administration in those three presentations used the word, we've inherited this deal, and this is where we have to begin to negotiate with China.
Okay, so if we're going to, let's go with the idea here that the administration, the trade rep, they are not, as you said, they're not going to hold China's feet to the fire on this deal. They're not going to pursue phase two, is what they said. Let's get to actual Chinese needs. They have some issues there. Expansion of the hog herd has kind of stalled. That has led some people to believe that feed demand may simply not be there. I know they've got some issues at their crush plants. They've got power issues. What sort of demand issues do you see there as being obstacles to additional Chinese purchases?
Let me just clarify one thing. My comment specific to not holding China's feet to the fire is specific to agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading USTR Tai as saying that she actually believes that China has effectively, not in dollar terms, but effectively met the spirit of the agreement in agriculture. Okay. I mean, if you look at the trade, we've set all sorts of records in corn and nearly a record in soybeans. Mm-hmm. However, the other point that I would make there, and this also goes back to the negotiation, it wasn't communicated very well, but subtly I heard and saw Chinese officials refer to kind of a clause that said our agreement is based on our demand. And so in that respect, I think in my mind, we should probably be considering the baseline for China's import needs would be something similar to that of 2017, which is kind of where the soybean sales to China have ended up in the past year or so. So that's the baseline. I think hog prices are certainly at very challenging levels in China. They're losing money. And as a result, in fact, I think the sow numbers in China declined in July for the first time in like 21 months. And that of course, tells us that prices have got to levels that hog producers are actually liquidating their factory of future inventory, if you will. So I really am concerned and have been concerned, even going back to prior to the August 10 forecast of USDA. I was 100 million bushel below the USDA in terms of total soybean exports, and I don't see any reason to be more optimistic than I was then. So I think that we're going to see some downside revisions in China's soybean import number relative to where they are. Speaking specifically to that, USDA's current soybean export forecast is 170 million bushels below last year. The current sales are actually 500 million bushels below last year. So I think that's going to be a very difficult gap to close, especially as we consider that Brazil is likely to produce a record crop. And that crop, given the planting progress to date, looks like it's going to begin to come off late January, February forward. So it's going to be very hard to it's going to be very difficult to make up the ground that we are at relative to the forecasted exports.
So Chinese, I believe, if my math is correct, Chinese purchases of new crop beans for this marketing year, if you put it in a percentage terms, they're behind like 40% versus last year. But last year was a record. And USDA, essentially, just to summarize this, is kind of projecting that we're not going to quite be at those levels again, but they're only calling for like a 7 or 8% year-over-year reduction in total exports out of the United States. And total export sales, I think, are down 36%. So we have a big gap there. How much do these issues at the Gulf and do the record Brazilian crop from last year play into what's going on now in regard to sales and the slower pace of sales, I guess you could say?
Well, it's cost us some business here in October. There was clearly a period of time when U.S. exporters would not even offer October shipment soybeans over the lack of certainty as to when they'll even regain power. So once that business got done in Brazil, and there was a two or three week period where there were 10 to 15 cargoes a week trading out of Brazil for various positions October forward. So that's business that we've lost. It's not going to come back, I don't think. So our major opportunity is going to be probably still a little bit of open business for late October shipment. But China looks like they're pretty wide open for November and December. And that looks like it should be 90%, if not more, of U.S. business. I mean, Brazil's supply of soybeans is pretty well tapped out by now.
So when you look at, and this is projecting far into the future, but when you look at USDA's export projection for U.S. beans this year, 2.09 billion bushels, I mean, would you make the argument that is it 100 million too high? Is it 200 million too high? Or is it too early to even talk like that?
Let me put it in these terms. For the upcoming October 12 supply and demand, I submitted today an estimate to Bloomberg that indicates the ending stocks for U.S. soybeans in 2022 will be 300 million bushels. And of course, part of that increase relative to last month is the 80 million bushel increase 2020 production. But as I said earlier, I believe that exports are at least 100 million too high and maybe much more.
Okay. So soybean export sales are soft. A lot of people are talking downward revisions. Corn, I think, is a much different situation because China does have a record book of U.S. corn purchases for this current marketing year, yet they have been like totally off the radar and absent since the end of May, basically, when it comes to corn purchases out of the U.S. for this year. We just saw that report from the attaché office in China talking that we're not going to be 26 million. It's going to be more like 20 million. Why has China been totally absent? Do they even need the 10 million or 11 million that they already bought? This is kind of a head scratcher for me personally.
What I see happening there is, of course, first of all, and foremost, the domestic prices of corn in China have really come down a lot over the past few months.
They're going to have a big crop there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think looks like the forecasts are basically record crop. And what was contained also in the attaché's report that you and I saw today is that feed demand is slowing. In fact, he looked at total grain feed demand, including wheat, barley, grain sorghum. I think he even included rice. Total grain consumption, he says, will only be up 2% year over year in 21-22 relative to the year just finishing. So feed demand is slowing. But getting back to your specific question, yes, they've not been active in the U.S. corn market since May. And from what I can tell, they've not been active in Ukraine, which is going to be their first go-to market. Ukraine right now is at a discount to the U.S. on a landed basis in China. So I would be keeping my eye on the Ukraine corn market as a clue as to when China may or may not come back into the global corn market.
The difference between corn and soybeans when it comes to China, of course, is that China has historically been such a big buyer of U.S. soybeans. Yet last year was a total anomaly when it comes to corn. And they imported a record amount of corn, like, what, three times the prior record or something along those lines? I guess the question that I have, and that I think a lot of people have, was last year's Chinese corn imports, was that a one-and-done deal, or is this something that is going to continue? You know, maybe it slows this year, but are they going to become a consistent importer of corn like they are in soybeans, or is this something that was more of a short-lived type thing?
I think last year was a slight anomaly on corn, but I think the broader question you're asking is, can they be reliable, reasonably large corn buyer over the next few years? And yes. I would say yes, they will be in the global corn market as an importer at some level over the next few years. My only preference, or I guess the only thing I would caution there, though, is, and I still refer back to this, China's possible ace in the hole, if you will, is that they've yet to commercialize biotech corn for raising in China, for domestic production in China. And I think that that's something that is coming. I see the preparations being made for it. And so I would say in a 2 or 3 year period, yes, we're going to see China active in the global corn market. And if I had to pin a number on what that number is going to be, of course, obviously dependent upon their domestic production. But I would say in the neighborhood of 15 to 30 million tons would be a good baseline to expect over the next 2 or 3 years on a total global import basis. But I think one important thing to keep in mind is that at this point in time, the U.S. and the Ukraine are the only approved countries by which China has approved the imports of corn. You've still got Brazil, you've still got Argentina, and I would be very shocked if at some point they don't get approval for buying corn from Brazil and Argentina. So, I raise that question because one thing that concerned me just a little bit about USDR Tai's comments the other day is that she made a specific comment that U.S. market share of agricultural products have been declining. Well, that's true, but there's nothing that you can do in trade policy to change that, because we all know why it's been declining, because acreage in Brazil keeps rising. And it looks like, based on the 2021 acreage planted in the U.S., U.S. acreage is actually on the decline. So there's nothing trade policy that I can see is going to change the fact that market share is a challenge.
I have one last question for you. I didn't mention this to you before we talked, but I had read a couple different things, I think last week, suggesting that China was going to kind of back off its ideas regarding ethanol. And I know that they had pushed or were pushing at one point for this nationwide ethanol mandate. And there's been some change in thought there. What is the latest that you've heard or are you aware of on that?
I'm not aware of anything that...
I don't think it was like an official statement. I think it was like just sources indicate or whatever, you know, one of those deals.
I would only say I've not seen any reports to that regard, but I would only say, first of all, the industry is operating at a very low capacity now. Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense when if you can import ethanol at more economical levels than you can produce it, especially when your corn supply is tight, then that's what you should do. So I would not be surprised if they de-emphasize that, but I haven't seen that.
Good deal. Hey, guys, that's Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets. I will leave the link to his website in the YouTube video. Ken, thanks again for joining us here. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure here, Joe. So thanks, and we'll do it again.
We'll see you next time.